Yes, sir.
You still get to play with Robert Earl Keane. What's that like?
Oh man, that's a good bunch of guys. Yeah, I'm getting ready to play with them. I just talked to him. He's gonna help me with one of my records. The various producers are gonna make this record with like three different producers, and he's gonna be one of the guys. We recorded in Nashville. Yeah, we play. I was out for 3 weeks with him earlier this year, and I'm gonna be out with him a couple 3 weeks later in the year. And we're gonna play in Santa Cruz and at the Harley Strictly Festival in San Francisco. So it's mainly West Coast stuff. But the answer to that is yes. And what's it like playing with him? Robert is he's a smart guy. He's a very literate man, very fun to be around. And I think as a musician, I really admire the way he's really kind of figured out his fans, and he really has a great way of giving them, you know, reacting with his fans and interacting with his fans. I've never seen a guy sign as many autographs. He'll stay there till the very end and sign autographs and talk to people every place that you go. It's really amazing. He's a really good guy. He's a real inspiration to me, and he's a smart man, a good guy to hang out with. All the guys in the band are really good people to hang with and stuff, so it's a lot of fun playing with Robert. I played on four tracks on his last record. The press sheet said, featuring special guest artists Danny Barnes and Ray Price. I sent that to my mom, and that was pretty cool. But, you know, me and Ray, we're just like this. Mom. Anybody else got questions for weird music from Barnes or anything? I'm gonna keep playing, I guess. Yes, ma'am.
Do you play anything besides guitar and banjo?
You know, actually what I do is I write music and I come up with stuff and I make little dots on pieces of paper is my thing, right? So that's kind of what I really do is I eat up pencils, you know? But I play the banjo and guitar and sing, but they're mainly, for me, you can find millions of guys that are a lot better than I am at music and singing and playing, but my thing, I feel like my purpose on earth is really to come up with ideas. So I consider myself to be a person that puts dots on pieces of paper more than a musician, really, in terms of a player guy. But I get hired to play on other people's records and play in their bands and things. But I play the guitar and the tuba. I was trained on tuba, actually, and voice. And actually, my formal training is in audio. That's my 4-year degree is in audio. But anyway, so did I answer your question? Yes.
Where do you find inspiration?
Everywhere, really. I read this quote by, I think John Cage said, "Everything is music if you listen to it as music." You know, lately I've been really reading a lot about this time period of the 20s and the way all these characters interacted with each other. Salvador Dali, Man Ray the photographer, Gertrude Stein, Ezra Pound, Igor Stravinsky, all these people, they interacted with each other. Marcel Duchamp, that modern artist, they all sort of interacted with each other. And they created all this beautiful music, and in a very short period of time, there was this axis between Paris and New York. And they basically just created the modern world of art in terms of film, poetry, architecture, everything. And I've been really interested in that period of time. It was just when composers were beginning to experiment with atonality. These Austrian guys, Schoenberg, and various people that were starting to experiment with 12-tone and atonality. The composer Webern was just beginning to sort of deviate from tonality. That period really, I'm really amazed at how much forward art went in just like 8 years. It's pretty amazing. And we're still trying to deal with, you know, in terms of art and music, I think, in terms of what's contemporary after avant-garde. How can you be more contemporary than avant-garde? It's, you know, it's pretty interesting. They all interacted, you know, the poets and the musicians, they sort of hung out together and they ate dinner together and talked, and they just came up with Dadaism, surrealism, and serial composition, and all these things just bam, you know? Amazing, it's an amazing time. Anyway. Yes.
Last year when you were touring with that Wayne Horvitz project and the Joe Hill.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I wonder if you
can
talk about that a little bit
and
what that was like for you in terms of what you had done in the past
musically. Well, Wayne Horvitz, he mentioned this opera that I was in called Joe Hill, which is it was a modern opera about a fella named Joe Hill who was executed by the state of Utah. And I think in the early part of the century, he was kind of pre-Woody Guthrie, and he was a union organizer and very interesting fella. And my friend Wayne Horvitz composed an opera about this and used some of his writings in terms of the libretto, the vocal part of it. It was a really challenging piece because all the music was through composed. You know, like in a song like, verse chorus structure piece, once you learn the verse, you already know about a third of the song, you know. But when it's through composed, there was like 60 or 70 pages of music on the stand. And it was, a lot of it was sort of modern harmony where there wasn't like a key signature. So you really had to learn. It was a lot of work. But it was really a beautiful piece. And singing with an orchestra, I've never sung with an orchestra before, which is like surfing a giant wave or something. It's pretty awesome. What's really weird is they follow you. Like if you speed up or slow down, the conductor follows you. And it's a real feeling of power. It's like surfing a giant wave. It's really weird, you know, because like it's really interesting. And I really like working with a conductor. It's awesome. And a lot of times I wish that. I think it'd be a really cool visual thing for a bluegrass band to have a conductor. It'd be awesome. Because the conductor brings everything together, and a lot of times you see a band and a guy on the end is not paying attention, his timing is a little off, and the conductor could rap on the stand, game back in the game, and stuff like that. And he can wear tails and everything and have his back to the audience. But working with a conductor is really cool because the pressure's off with a conductor. You just follow the conductor, so the pressure's off. So anyway, I guess I talked enough about that. I was singing. I was the lead. I was Joe Hill. I was the lead role of the opera. It's a modern opera. It's actually technically an oratorio, which is an opera without action. It's just the music part. But it's a story about this fellow, Joe Hill. And there's a couple of books about him. He's a real interesting guy. He was executed in the state of Utah for being, some people say he was kind of set up for this kind of murder thing and all this and that. And he never would name where he actually was. And so he kind of martyred himself, some people say. There's different legends about it. But an interesting guy, Joe Hill. Well, interesting, that music has never been recorded, and I don't have any music with me from the piece, but that music has never been recorded. We did a performance in Burlington, Vermont, and a performance in Seattle, and we're hoping to try to get some funding for it and everything, try to do a record on it. You want to hear that song, Death Trip? How do you know about that song? Can I interview you for a second? How do you know that? I see. Did he put you up to that? You have that Blood and Mood CD in your car? You got that car? Because I always imagine, in my life, what's that? You have a car?
I got it.
I always have a vision that I make these records and I just fling them off a cliff. It amazes the hell out of me. Anybody actually listens to this stuff. You heard that? You're the guy that bought that. They have this thing called SoundScan. You ever heard of a SoundScan? A SoundScan is like your RBI or your ERA or something. It tells you how many records that you sold, where you sold them, and everything. Boy, I have really low SoundScan audience. It's really low. I have a very small audience. So when anybody here listens to my records, it amazes the hell out of me. I can't believe it. Anyway, I'll play this song, Death Trip. You know that song? That record sold 17 copies. And my mother bought three of them, so it didn't really count. So. No, it sold 20 copies. Anyway, I don't have any with me. Only thing I brought is get myself together my new record. But that record you can get, order it from Sugar Hill, they sell that. Who asked that if I had any with me? Yeah, it's on. How you doing, man? I feel like I should just know everybody personally that bought those records. Have them over to my house for a big fish fry or something. You know? There can't be that many of them. I mean, I saw the sound scan. Don't worry, honey, there's only a few people coming for dinner. That record was, I began to get interested in these tape manipulators from the 20s and things, these guys that chopped up audio tape and made these sound movies out of chopped up pieces of tape. It's common in modern music on the top 40 to create songs out of pieces of other songs using audio bits of it. It's called sampling. And so that record was my attempt to bring acoustic bluegrass type music into the modern world of sampling, and it failed miserably. The record company hated the record. Everybody hated the record except me. I got a fan letter from John Paul Jones, though. He loved it. Paul Lee from the Dead Old Surfers loved it. Only musician people got it. This lady here, just a handful of people enjoyed the record. Anyway, this is a song called Death Trip.